So, I wanted to say a few words about twisted K theory today. And mostly I wanted to emphasize techniques of computation. Occasionally get asked about these kind of computations, and I will go away and make one, and then give the person asked me a fish. And now I want to give you a fishing lesson instead of a fish. So this is kind of going to be a calculus lecture today. So let me just say before I... this is really just a little bit of an overview of some computations. And I'll be reporting on joint work of myself, Dan Fried, and Constantine Telemann. And then there have been a few other people that have picked up and done more with these calculations. So there's the physicist Volker Braun. I have a student, Chris Douglas, that's done a few of these calculations. And I'll report on their work. And then Constantine has a student. I have to... who's also made some interesting calculations of twisted K groups. So today I'm going to report on some of the results of these people, but again with an emphasis on how you actually make these calculations. So the first thing, let me... twisted K theory is a lot like K theory. K theory is some embodiment of the mathematical local to global principle. Twisted K theory is a variation on that. So let's see. Suppose I want to make a vector bundle over a space. And suppose my space is covered by some open sets, say ui and uj. I can make a vector bundle over, so this will be a picture of x, and I could make a vector bundle over x by having vector bundles vi over each open set ui, and then on the intersection an isomorphism on the intersection. And these isomorphisms have to satisfy the cocycle condition that lambda ij composed with lambda jk is lambda ik. In fact, this cocycle equation is, in some sense, the core of local to global things in mathematics. All right, so for twisted K theory, we want to twist this cocycle equation. So let's suppose instead now we have a twisting of K theory. So that is going to be on our intersection, ui intersect uj, I have something I'll call, let's write it as lij, and lij is an automorphism of the K-theory on ui intersect uj. So I'll be more specific about what I mean by an automorphism in a minute, but let's just accept this as kind of a philosophical term. So that's some kind of automorphism of K-theory on ui intersect uj. And then we would define an element of twisted K-theory, or a twisted vector bundle, would now it would be just like above. We'd have vector bundles vi on each ui, but we would twist the cocycle equation. So instead of identifying VI with VJ, instead of identifying VI with VJ, we'd first apply our transformation. And then I need to make sense of the co-cycle equation. And to make sense of the co-cycle equation, we would need that these twistings, these automorphisms of K-theory have to compose right. So we would need that LJK composed with LIJ is LIK. All right, so equipping a space with some local automorphisms of K-theory gives us a twisted notion of vector bundle and twisted K-groups. So we'll think of the LIJs give me a twisting, and we'll use tau to indicate the aggregate of these LIJs, and this leads to a twisted notion of K-theory. Now, there's actually a lot of different kinds of twisting of K-theory, but there's only some very simple ones that come up in the cases that are of interest in physics and in much of the mathematical theory. So let's think about one way I can get an automorphism of, one way I can get a transformation of from K-theory to itself is to just tensor my vector bundles with another vector bundle. So if Lij was a vector bundle on here, I could tensor with it and get a transformation from K-theory to itself. That'll only be an automorphism if Lij is a line bundle. Now, I don't really need an actual line bundle. I could have minus a line bundle. That's another unit in the K-theory. And so if we think of minus a line bundle as a line bundle in odd degrees, you find that we can realize these twistings if we think of Lij as a graded line bundle. On UI intersect UJ, and it acting on K-theory by tensoring. And that gives me an automorphism of K-theory. So let's just think about what that data is. I have a one cocycle on my space with values in graded line bundles, and so this data, this collection of LIJs, that defines for me an element in some check element in H1 of X with Z2 coefficients cross H3 of X with integer coefficients. So we are twisting, we can twist K-theory by elements of this group. Okay, so that's all I want to say. There's been a lot of different kinds of expository talks on twisted K-theory. What I want to do now is emphasize how you actually make the calculations of twisted K-theory. I'll be using a couple of different variations. So our twisting will be an element of this group, and we'll have a twisted notion of K-theory based on that. So there's a couple of important variations which I won't spell out except on the fly in calculations, but we could also twist K-homology, and we could also twist equivariant K-theory. I just need to require that these LIJs are equivariant line bundles. So we'll encounter these variations, but everything kind of, when you get down to actually making calculations, everything works sort of the same. So The easiest example to do, sort of I think the most basic prototype for these kind of calculations is to take x to be S3 and tau, say, k times the generator in H3 of S3 with integer coefficients. And let's just, so the methodology for making these calculations is always going to be to somehow fracture my space into pieces on which the twisting becomes zero. And then, so those are just ordinary K groups I have to calculate. And then I have to assemble the twisted K theory from the decomposition. So let's just write S3 as just with the standard open covering. So we'll write that as U1 union U2, or let's say let's call it U1 union U2, and I just mean I'm decomposing the 3-sphere into, say, the complement of one point and the complement of its antipode. So U1 will be, say, the complement of this point, and U2 will be the complement of that point, and U1 intersect U2 is homotopy equivalent to the 2-sphere. So if I... if I went back to this picture then, if I go back to this picture, then, which I just erased, so we have, now twisted K theory is a cohomology theory, so we have Meyer via Torres sequences. So that would go from the, I also didn't give you some notation, that would go from the twisted K zero group of S3 to the twisted zeroth K group of U1 plus the twisted K zeroth K group of U2 going to the twisted K group of the intersection, and then connecting around to K1 of this. Etc. Now, our twisting class, let's just go back. Our twisting class restricts to zero on U1, U2, and on the intersection. So these are just ordinary K groups. So I know the values of these groups. This is the integers. This is the integers. This is the K theory of the 2-sphere, which is Z plus Z. And we'll want to give this an explicit basis in a minute. And these groups here, this group coming in is 0. That's an odd K group of the 2-sphere, as are these groups. So our twisted K groups of S3 are just the kernel and co-kernel of this map. Now, everything here, so far, nothing I've said sees the twisting. But the twisting, because we restrict it to little open sets where the twisting was trivial, and so we didn't have, our twisted K groups were ordinary K groups. But the twisting reappears in studying this map. So let's go back to the definition. If I go back to the definition, then I have this element, which is K times the generator in the cohomology of S3 with integer coefficients. If I wanted to write that in the language of that I started with, I'm really supposed to not give you a cohomology class, but a covering and some line bundles on the intersections. So if this is my U1 and this is my U2, this class, which is K times the generator of H3, corresponds to the kth power of the canonical line bundle over the two-sphere. So this is the kth power of the tautological line bundle, or the Hopf line bundle, over the two-sphere, which I'm identifying with P1. So our definition of a twisted vector bundle would be a vector bundle here, a vector bundle here. They don't agree on the overlaps. I have to tensor this one with this line bundle before they agree. And so that changes the, if I transport that back to the Meyer-Vietoris sequence, that changes my changes what this map does. So let me clean up this diagram a little bit. Well, actually, that makes it hard for you to take notes. I'll rewrite it. I have K of U1 plus K of U2. So these are both the integers generated by the trivial line bundle over each of these open sets. So this is the integers, this is the integers, and it's generated by the trivial line bundle on each of those open sets. Now, I'm supposed to map to the K group of the intersection, and that's the K theory of the two-sphere, and it's more convenient, that's also Z plus Z, and it's more convenient for me if I take one generator to be the trivial line bundle, and the other to be a class I'll call X, which is the reduced canonical line bundle. So now, what about this map? Well, we're supposed to take two vector bundles, and we don't want to identify them on the open set. We're supposed to take one of them and restrict it to the intersection, and we're supposed to take the other and tensor with the kth power of the canonical line bundle before I shift to the open set. So this, say this one here, let's write down the matrix of this map. Or let's just write down the map. This one will go over to 1, and this one has to go over to L to the K. And that's equal to 1 plus K times X. Because x squared is 0 here. Okay, so the matrix of this transformation is 1, 0, 1, k, and you find that this map is a monomorphism and the co-kernel is cyclic of order k. Okay, so that's the most basic calculation, and I'll just right here indicate that this group we've concluded is 0, and this group is cyclic of order k. So all I wanted, this is the first calculation anybody does when you start learning about twisted k theory. The thing you're supposed to extract from this discussion is that you decompose your space into pieces where the twisted k theory is just ordinary k theory, and then in the local to global. So then you have some kind of exact sequence or some spectral sequence, and the twisting reappears in the structure maps. Okay, that's supposed to be a simple example. Let me just do. Oh.
When you restrict to the overlap of both sides, you have the trivial bundle, and in each case from the left and the right. Obviously.
Yeah.
But then you're saying that the two restrictions can be identified after tensoring the non-trivial line bundle.
Well, I mean, I'm not actually getting anything in K0. It's all I'm getting is stuff in K1. So maybe I misdirected you with the initial discussion because I didn't say what an element in K1 is. All right.
I see. So it's consistent with what I
It's consistent with what you just, yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't intend to do.
Yeah, there is no, whatever this is, hyper bundle.
Right. I don't know, what do we call it? A twisted bundle, yeah. There isn't one over the three sphere, yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put such misdirection in the beginning. Right, but the group, but that's right. I only wind up with odd groups here. But, okay. Okay, let me just kind of run through a very quick variation on this. I mean, I like to think of we like to write, I mean, this tau is the twisting and this is the degree. Yeah, it's just that's right. But when you sort of, if you step back, there's a rationale for thinking of K1 as a twisted version of K0. And if you really put all these together, there's kind of a single common group over which you could grade K-theory, which is a combination of this group of twistings and the degree. So, but yeah, go ahead and read this as a comma. I also see this as bad notation if I wanted to call that K, standing for the element in HK of S3. You might think I'm at K plus 1 here, and I don't. So yeah, read this as a comma, and pretty much, I guess you can just take anything I wrote and substitute your own symbol for it. I'm sorry about that. When I was getting this ready, I was just focused on... Yeah, well, there's this thing about calculations that we know very well in homotopy theory, that if you're making a hard calculation and you don't have either a good reason for knowing the answer or a good expectation of the answer, you're going to get it wrong. And the homotopy groups of spheres is full of, I mean, these calculations that go way far out, they always have mistakes, and people are always finding and correcting them. But until you have a... So I was... On some of these, I was just focused on not making a mistake in the calculation, and I'm afraid I didn't think about all the misdirection in this notation. Okay, so let me just do another. Let me just indicate a little modification of this. Let's now calculate. Let's now think about the same thing. Only we'll think of S3 as SU2, and we'll think about the S1, the equivariant K-theory of SU2. So now I would use the same Meyer-Viatora sequence. So let's write down the interesting map again. So I'm going to use the same sequence. Here I get two copies of the ordinary equivariant K-theory of a point. So that's just, of course, the representation ring of SU2. And so I get the representation ring of SU2, direct sum the representation ring of SU2. And here I get the equivariant K theory of SU2 modulo its maximal torus, which is, of course, the representation ring of the maximal torus. And now let's just look at what this map is again. And the easiest way to see this map is to draw a picture. Let's write the representation ring of the maximal torus as the free abelian group on the weights. So if I have the Lie algebra of the dual of the maximal torus here, and here are the weights, then so somewhere out here I'll have K. Then the representation ring of T is the free abelian group on these dots. This copy of the representation ring of SU2 will come in as the stuff that's invariant under this flip. But now I'm not supposed to take the ordinary restriction here. I'm supposed to shift it by tensoring with L to the K. So this thing goes in by the invariance under this flip and then gets tensored over, gets shifted over by K. So I wind up with this thing, this copy coming in as the invariance under this flip. That's my two sphere, which is the intersection.
Actually, so it's just acting on the right.
Oh, I should have said acting by conjugation. Right. I'm sorry. This is SU2 acting by conjugation. Right. I mean, that's the regular conjugacy class.
Okay.
Yeah. And this one, yes, it's acting on T. On the left in that picture. That's right. T is the... SU2 is acting on itself by conjugation, and now I'm just taking... So inside here is a... I mean, so now I'm just looking at the orbit through this point, which is SU2. That's a regular conjugacy class, which I can write as SU2 mod the maximal torus. So the when I act on itself by conjugation, the conjugacy classes are points, and then all these two spheres, which are all have the equivariant which are all just SU2 mod the maximal torus. Okay, so in this case, let's just look at this. What's in the kernel of this map? Well, it's supposed to be an element here and an element here which go to zero in the representation ring of T. But that means so that's got to be an element so that means that whatever element this is in the representation ring of SU2, it's invariant under this Z mod 2, but it's equal to something that comes from this representation ring, which is invariant under this flip. So the only way I can have an element A, B that goes to 0 is if A was something that was invariant under both of these reflections. But that means A couldn't be a finite linear combination of these. It couldn't be in the free abelian group generated by these points because the composition of these reflections is a translation. So it would have to have infinite support. So the kernel of this map, again, is 0. And the co-kernel, well, that's also easy to see because these two reflections, well, this interval is a fundamental domain for the group generated, the dihedral group generated by these two reflections. And so all I'm left with in the co-kernel is the free abelian group on this many generators. So the co-kernel is a free abelian group of dimension k minus 1. And that's what the twisted k1 is. So this is supposed to be a special case of a general theorem, which I'll use, that's due to myself, due to Dan Fried. So we have this more general theorem due to Telemann that the twisted K theory, now I'm going to write it in, well, all right, I'll write it like this. So the twisted K theory, the twisted equivariant K theory of G, where G is a compact Lie group, is the representation of the loop group shifted level tau minus sigma, where sigma is the level of the adjoint representation. So if I had written this in homology, I have a Pontryagin product here. And this is, this is isomorphic to this. This is, if I write this in homology, these are isomorphic by Poincaré duality. And this becomes an algebra under the Pontryagin product. And the ring structure here corresponds to the fusion product here. So that's the Verlinde algebra at level tau minus sigma. This includes twisting by H1, yeah, and on the right-hand side. I have to use a twisted loop group. Right, that would only work in the case where G is not connected, and so I would consider one of the... Let's not worry about that. I'll talk about that later, but I just use... I mean, this, you think of this as a gauge group. I mean, I'm looking at a non-trivial G bundle over the circle. And the,
but I'm wondering, what is the wisdom in the wisdom
model? Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. You have to ask my co-authors who know more about this than I do. So, well, anyway, let's talk about that later. I want to try to finish on time and also illustrate some of the more useful, some of the more powerful computational techniques. So this was just supposed to be a quick warm-up, indicating how this differs from some ordinary kind of calculation. You would have something that you would calculate as a Meyer-Vietora sequence, but some of the structure maps would be different, and they'd be seen in terms of the twisting. Okay, so that's supposed to be right, the basic case. This technique, so now if I had a more general covering, so if I had a covering by more than two elements, instead of a Meyer-Vietoris long exact sequence, you get a Meyer-Vietoris spectral sequence. And that spectral sequence, this same technique works just as well for any compact Lie group whose fundamental group is torsion free. So this little basic technique here is very useful in some for quite a general case. There's a strange thing that we'll see in higher when we now talk about other Lie groups, that the equivariant twisted K theory is easier to compute than the non-equivariant twisted K theory. And the main focus of this talk is going to be on evaluating the non-equivariant twisted K groups of compact Lie groups. Okay, so right. Okay, now to go much further, you need to think a little more generally. You need to allow coverings by more general things than just open sets. So, a covering by so we need more general coverings. So let's just remember, what are the basic things we have when we have a covering? We have some open sets Ui covering X, and we have their intersections, the twofold intersections, which is also just the fiber product. And more generally, iterated intersections are just iterated fiber products. Well, these things like homology, cohomology, K groups, twisted K groups, you don't really need to cover X by open sets. You can cover it by sort of very general maps. And as long as you, wherever you wanted to take a intersection, you took fiber product. So a very beautiful covering to use is to cover X by the path space of X. So I'm going to cover X by a single open set, but it's not an open subset. It's the whole path space of X. And we're just going to regard this as a covering. So let's suppose now X is path connected. I'm always going to suppose that. All right, so that's my covering is just going to be by one set, and that's the path space of X. So there's only one UI, but what about UI intersect UJ? Well, that's supposed to be the fiber product of the path space of X over X with the path space of X. So let's think about what a point in that is. A point in that is, so here, I'll just do it here. Here's my space X, and here's its base point. Then I have a path in X that starts at the base point and ends somewhere. And I have another path in X that starts here and ends at the base point. So that gives me two pieces of data. It gives me a loop in X and also a path in X. And in fact, this space is homotopy equivalent to paths on X cross loops on X. Okay, and there's an obvious inclusion of this into here, which sends this first path to a path. Well, let's just leave it. Well, and the second, I'm sorry? Px is contractible. I'm fixing, yeah, Px is the based path space. It's loops with a point on the loop. That's homotopy equivalent, though, to the product of, you're supposed to think of this as, you're supposed to picture X as BG, where G is the loop space of X made into a group under loop multiplication. And this is EG. And this is EG cross G.
Because the right-hand side of the path and the loop are completely non-connected to each other.
Right. If I want to make a map in this direction, I would have my, I have... It's the loop space up to homotopy, but there's an extra piece of data, which is the place where this...
There's two paths starting at the same point and ending.
Yeah, but that point, you just remembered that point where they ended, right? The homotopy, the fiber is homotopy equivalent to the base loop space. You know, here, does this help? I mean, if I take, this is what Dan was saying, I can consider the constant path sitting inside the path space mapping to X and pull the path space vibration back to here. So this is the thing we wanted. And if I pull it back all the way to this, now I literally am looking at the loop space. And this map is a homotopy equivalent, so this map has to be. So it's homotopy equivalent to the loop space, but you know, maybe the thing I should have said, I think I'm trying to do this too generally. In our case, X is going to be a group. And if X is a group, then these are actually homeomorphic, because I can take a path. If I have a path and a loop, I can send that to the, I can pointwise multiply the path by the loop and send that to a path, to a pair of paths. And conversely, if I have two paths that end at the same point, if I use the group structure in G and form their ratio, then I get a loop. So this is actually a homeomorphism if X is a group. Okay.
But the way you described it, that loop is not visibly a loop.
Okay, I didn't finish that statement. Right. And so just a sec. Let me make the... All right, so on this side, I have a path, and I have a loop. Okay, now I have to send that to two paths that end at the same point.
Where's the base point?
Here. I'm sorry, this is just ending at some point. So now I have to send that to a pair of paths that end at the same point. The first path will be this one, and the second one will be this one. Okay. So that's the map in this direction, and there, that's a homotopy equivalence. All right. So one way or another, that's what this is supposed to be. And more generally, then, the iterated fiber product by induction, if you want, certainly has the homotopy type of paths on X cross loops on X cross loops on X. Okay. Okay. Now, out of this, so I want to think of these as, I want to think of this as a covering by one set, but since it wasn't an open subset, there are more, the k-fold intersections for every k will be different. I mean, if I cover a space just by one set, then the intersection of that with itself is just that set again. If I covered it by two sets, I'd have an intersection that was something different. And if I covered it by three, I'd have a triple intersection. With these more general kinds of coverings, even though I'm only covering it by one set, I get non-trivial higher order intersections. So this I'm supposed to think of, if there's k of these, I'm supposed to think of this as the k-fold intersection of my open sets. And it'll work out that there's k minus one of these. Okay, so I think you'll have to take my word for this, but the Meyer-Vietoris exact sequence becomes a spectral sequence in this case. So we get a kind of Meyer-Vietoris spectral sequence. And I'll describe its E1 and E2 terms in a minute. So if you want to read more details about this kind of construction, I think all of us topologists learned it from a paper of Graham Siegel's. And it's called Classifying Spaces and Spectral Sequences. And that appeared in, that was his thesis. It appeared in the IHES series around 1968. And you can get these things all online at this must be some French word, numdam. .org. Yeah, forgive my pronunciation. Anyway, numdam.org, and these things are all of the IHES journals, from 5 years ago and before are scanned and online. So all these papers you can find. All right. Anyway, that leads us to a spectral sequence. So if I have a good Kunneth formula, if the K theory of, now I'm going to work in K homology instead of cohomology, if the K homology of loops on X if this has a perfect Kunneth formula, then the E2 term of the spectral sequence is Tor over the K homology of loops on X of the K homology of a point, which is the K homology of the path space. And that converges to the K homology of X. And if I wanted to get K cohomology, I would use X instead of Tor. Now let me make a couple comments about this. This happens, this is automatic if the loops, if the odd homology groups of loops on X are zero. So for example, if X is a compact Lie group. Usually you think of the loop space as harder than the original space, but in these computations of twisted K groups and K groups, the loop space is actually a little easier. The space of loops on a Lie group is, in some sense, has an easier topology than the Lie group itself. And this becomes a very powerful spectral sequence. The other great thing about this spectral sequence is, last time our spectral sequences were Hannibal Lecter in disguise. These spectral sequences are Mahatma Gandhi in disguise. And just, they're as peaceful as they can be. There's no higher differentials. There's no extension problems. They're so peaceful you don't even have to draw them. You just evaluate these Tor groups and the ants and you're done. So I'm not even going to draw spectral sequences. My emphasis in this talk will be what these groups look like and how you evaluate them, because there's just a little standard collection of tools for making these calculations, and they work wonderfully in these cases of Lie groups. So let's do an example. So the general approach for computing these, and this would work in twisted K theory as well, okay? And remember, these are untwisted, so the variation in twisted K theory is the way this thing becomes an algebra over this. And I'll bring all these things up as we come to them. But let's take another example now, just to get the swing of this. Now let's take X to be SUN. I should also have said that you calculate these things using Bott, Samuelson, using all the beautiful geometry you have of the space of loops on a Lie group. So these calculations you tend to be able to handle. And I'll just indicate how they work out. All right, let's take X equal to SUN, and then there's a beautiful, and I need to understand the homology or the K-homology of loops on X. So the simplest thing is to embed complex projective space into loops on UN. So this will actually go into the one component. I can think of this map in one of two ways. Maybe the most geometric way is a point in CPN minus 1 is a complex line through the origin in CN. And I just send it to the loop in UN that, which at time t rotates by e to the it, e to the 2 pi it on this thing and is the identity map on the orthogonal complement. That's also, that map's equivariant, in fact, for the adjoint action, and this is just conjugating a fixed loop by UN, and factoring through CPN minus 1. So there's a very nice map like this. It doesn't land in loops on SUN because this matrix has determinant e to the 2 pi I t. But if we just translate by some fixed matrix of the same determinant back to the zero component, we can get a map from CPN minus 1 into loops on SUN. So this is a very important embedding, and it really controls the topology of loops on SUN. And in fact, the K theory, the K homology of loops on SUN is the symmetric algebra on the K homology of CPN minus 1. Now, what about the K homology of CPN minus 1? The K homology of CPN minus 1 is the dual by the Kunneth theorem of the K cohomology of CPN minus 1. It's Hom of that into Z. And what about that? I'm going to erase this. The K cohomology of, that's Z of X modulo X to the N, where X is the reduced class of the canonical line bundle. And so the K homology of CPN minus 1 is a free abelian group on generators B0, B1, Bn minus 1. And I should have said this is the symmetric algebra modulo B0 equals 1. So the K homology of loops on SUN is a polynomial algebra on n minus 1. It's a polynomial algebra on n minus 1 classes.
So how does that embedding? So how does it conclude from that with the K homology of loops on SUN?
Well, I know that the homology works that way, for instance, from Bott or something, and then the Atiyah-Hirzebruch spectral sequence tells me the K theory works that way. Okay. So I'm going to emphasize techniques of computation in this talk, but I'm not going to ask me later if you want to understand how to make the calculations of these loops on Lie groups. So you use old techniques of Bott, or you use Bott-Samuelson generating varieties, and you can usually get your hands on this. So that's a kind of a different problem, but the thing I want to focus on is how I go from this to the K theory, or the twisted K theory of the Lie groups. Okay, so all right. So how does So let's first think about the untwisted K theory. Of SUN. So now I'm supposed to calculate TOR over the K homology of loops on SUN, which we've evaluated, of Z with Z. And the map from this map sends all the BIs to zero. Okay, we can work that out pretty easily. And I'll say more about this when I do the twisted case. So what we're supposed to be, so this is both maps. There's two maps from this into Z, and both of them send the BIs to zero. So I'm supposed to compute TOR over a polynomial algebra of Z with Z. So calculating TOR groups, what you do is there are certain algebras for which it's easy to compute TOR, and then you do everything else by trying to compare your algebra with these algebras. So one easy algebra is a polynomial algebra, and that's easy because of the Kazuo complex. So you calculate this. Using the Kazuo complex. So let me just say a quick word more generally about Tor over a polynomial algebra of Z with some module M where the BIs go to 0 in Z, but they might act, they'll be operators on M. Okay, but let's make it all, let's just collapse, you're right, but let's collapse the grading and just regard it as Z2 graded. Otherwise, this Z, I mean, if you really wanted to think of it as Z graded, then this would have really been Z of UU inverse. Yeah, let's just collapse the grading. That won't affect our algebra, but we'll only be getting even and odd K groups. All right, I calculate this using a Kazuo resolution, and so what's the definition of Tor? By definition, I'm supposed to find a projective resolution of Z I'm supposed to take P tensor over my polynomial algebra. Let me just abbreviate that as A with M. And this is a chain complex, and we take the homology groups and then compute. Okay. So the Kazuo resolution is a particularly convenient free P. So the Kazuo complex is this differential graded algebra P, which is A tensor and exterior algebra on classes we'll call alpha 1 up to alpha n minus 1. And the differential of alpha I is BI. And this is a differential graded algebra. So that tells you what the differential is on every class. So that's easy to check that that's a projective resolution of Z. And so P tensor over A, M, is M tensor, the exterior algebra on alpha 1 up to alpha N, where the differential of forgive me, but I meant to write this on this side. And the differential of alpha I tensor M is BI times M. So this is a standard kind of resolution. You see a twisted version of this in the complex for computing Lie algebra cohomology. It's a very classical kind of resolution. But it's the first one you need when you're going to compute Tor groups. All right, so what happens in our case, in our first untwisted case here, we're... Thank you, yeah. Sorry. So in our case, the BIs go to 0 in M and in... The BIs are the 0 operator on M. So in our case, the Kazuo complex is just the exterior algebra on these classes, alpha 1 up to alpha n minus 1, and D of alpha I is 0. So the spectral sequence collapses, and the K homology of SUN is an exterior algebra on classes alpha 1 up to alpha n minus 1, where alpha I are in K1. They're odd classes. So this is supposed to be the simplest example where you actually hit a spectral sequence. Well, let me talk about the twisted version of this. So in the twisted version, well, now let's remember what happened in our first example. We had UI intersect UJ, including into UI and including into UJ. And the map in K-theory of one of these maps was the ordinary map, but the other one was supposed to change according to the twisting. So in our twisted K-theory, one of these maps has to change, and that has to reflect the twisting. So we're going to twist at K in H3 of SUN with integer coefficients. And now let's go back and unravel this and see how this will affect our calculation. So I have all of our UIs are the same. UI intersect J, UJ has the homotopy type of loops on SUN. Here it is sitting inside the paths on SUN, which is contractible. And here it is also sitting inside the path space of SUN, which is contractible. And then we also have CP n minus 1 sitting in here. So what does our twisting do? Our twisting, which was an element in H3 of this, is supposed to become a line bundle on the intersection. And the generator goes to the canonical line bundle, or the tautological line bundle, and K times the generator goes to the kth power of the tautological line bundle, just like it did in the case of SU2. So K comes down here and becomes the kth power of the tautological line bundle. So let's look at this map. I think the thing I would say is this element in, if I went and calculated the cohomology of SUN using the same spectral sequence, I'd find that this element in H3 came from K times the generator in H2 here. And that would imply that it corresponded to L to the K. Yeah, it is actually obvious. You can do it geometrically from the construction. But in general, maybe the thing I should say in general is that the twisting in H3 always corresponds to that corresponds to a line bundle over the loop Grassmannian, and that's the line bundle, that is the line bundle you use, and that restricts to the kth power of the tautological line bundle. I'm sorry? So it sat in the component of loops of degree 1 in UN, and I just pick a fixed loop of degree negative 1 and use that to translate back. Okay, so do you want me to say more about that? Okay, so all of the components of loops on SUN have the homotopy type of loops on UN have the homotopy type of loops on SUN, so I just translate it back. Okay, boy. So now we have to figure out what this map does in K homology. So in K cohomology, in K cohomology, By definition, 1 here goes to 1. And again, by definition, in our twisted case, 1 here goes to L to the K. So now we have to figure out what the dual of that is, what's happening in K homology. And this map sends all the BIs to 0. And I just write L as 1 plus x. Remember, x is L minus 1. So L to the k is 1 plus x to the k, which is the sum of k choose I, x to the I. And since x, the power of x to the I was the dual basis to the BIs, I find that BI here has to go to k choose I. Okay, so that's just the transpose. Right, the matrix representing this map is by definition the transpose of this matrix. And that's what I've worked out. So when you put all this together, you find that that our spectral sequence, that the K homology twisted at level K of SUN is the homology of the following complex. I'm supposed to take the homology of an exterior algebra on classes alpha 1 up to alpha n minus 1, where d of alpha I is k choose I. Nothing, just the difference is my ability to concentrate on the notation. I'm sorry. Yeah. okay, so I warned you this would be a calculus lecture. I hope. Okay, so now how do we do this? The easiest thing here is just choose a new basis. Let's write dn for the greatest common divisor of the numbers k choose 1 all the way up to k choose n minus 1, and just choose a new basis. Say alpha 1 primed all the way up to alpha n primed, where d of alpha 1 primed is dn, and d of the other alphas are 0. Okay. And then now it's easy to calculate the homology of this complex, and that just becomes a cyclic group of order dn tensor the exterior algebra on alpha 2 primed up to alpha n minus 1 primed. Because this complex is now the tensor product of this complex with this one, and this just follows from the Kunneth formula. Okay, so this again, this is a pretty basic technique. Even when the differentials are 0, it's easy. If they're not 0, you might be able to break the complex into a tensor product of some simpler ones by changing the basis or something. So let me just say, I want to report on some results. So, well, okay, we know there's no higher differentials because of Mahatma Gandhi. But now we actually know it because the differentials are derivations, and in a homology spectral sequence, the differentials lower homological degree. So these alpha I's are in Tor 1, so the higher differentials would have to be in negative Tor group. So there's no different, the differentials on all the alpha I's are 0, and by Leibniz's rule, they're 0 on all the products. So that's why these spectral sequences tend to be generated by as algebras by elements in low degree that are forced to be cycles in the spectral sequence. I'll try to say a little more about that in a minute, but that's how we know there's no higher differentials. Okay, so so my student, Chris Douglas, a has applied this technique using Bott-Samuelson varieties. So he's applied this technique and has computed the twisted K homology of G for all simply connected simple G. And what he gets at level K is that, so tau will correspond to K in H3 of G. With integer coefficients, he gets a cyclic group of some order D, which depends on G and K, tensor and exterior algebra on alpha 1 up to alpha R minus 1, where R is the rank of G. So this is kind of, and it goes a lot like this with a little exception, which I was also hoping to tell you about. But so the general compact simply connected Lie group looks the same. Now, what about this number D of GK? Well, Chris writes down a formula for it that's something like these greatest common divisors, but there's a theoretical guess for what that formula is, and that involves another approach to this. So there's another approach using the Kunneth spectral sequence. Which again, it's kind of funny that you can use it, that it's so effective here. And this one is, this method is worked out by Brown, who I mentioned at the beginning, modulo some hypothesis on the Verlinde algebra. So modulo I'll describe in a minute. But so here, for this other approach, you exploit the fact that the equivariant K-theory is something you know, and you want to compute the, and you try to express the ordinary K-theory in terms of the equivariant K-theory. So the example, so let's do it. So let's use the fact that, let's look at the equivariant K homology. So, you know, up there I've been writing the tau up, and I should have written it down here to leave room for the group. So I want to write the let's let G act on G cross G, where it's the adjoint action here and left translation here. So this, of course, this uses up all the group action, and this is just the same as the ordinary twisted K theory of G. On the other hand, I can write this, there's a Kunneth formula now. This is a product of G spaces, and there's a spectral sequence that goes from Tor over the equivariant K-theory of a point of Kg of G left with Kg of G adjoint. And that's the same thing as Tor over the representation ring of G of Z with the Verlinde algebra. Okay, so I'm putting this up because this is another way you can approach this by computing Tor over the representation ring of G of Z with the Verlinde algebra. And I mention this because this gives you an interpretation of what this is supposed to be. So I think this tells you that the numbers D of GK are the greatest common divisors of the dimension of rho I, where rho I are generators of the Verlinde ideal. So those are all the representations whose characters vanish on the Verlinde conjugacy classes. So I think if you put these spectral sequences together, you can conclude that the Verlinde ideal is generated by a regular sequence, which is Brown's hypothesis. But I'm not sure. And the anyway, I think I'll hold back on that. Anyway, that's supposed to give you a general picture of what the twisted K-theory looks like and a couple of techniques for computing it. I don't know how you guys' attention is holding up or how your energy is. I wanted to illustrate one more case of where the Tor calculation you're doing is more complicated, because there's a very useful technique when the algebra isn't polynomial. But I have a feeling that there's only one or two of you interested in that. And what's that?
Continue.
You want me to continue?
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the two that I thought was going to be interested in hearing that. What I need is two, three, four. Well, this is great. Going on four? Running four? Can I have five? Right, exactly. Right. Sold. All right. I'll just take a minute to go on. So to the rest of you, I apologize. I've sat through many highly computational lectures in growing up as a homotopy theorist, and I know what they're like. So, all right. So I want to. Here's why I hesitate in declaring that I can compare these methods and get the Verlinde algebra to be generated by a regular sequence. I want to do a calculate. So the technique I'm about to describe comes up in Chris's calculations. You need this other technique for computing Tor. But the example I want to do has to do, it's sort of a crazy way of computing. Well, it's the comparison of these two approaches when, it's the equivariant version of this for SU2. So let's try to use the equivariant version of this, and we're going to study the spectral sequence that would go from Tor over the the equivariant K theory of the representation ring of G and converging to KG of G. So the equivariant version of this. And I'm going to do it when G is SU2. So look, this is a little bit trickier to analyze. You can still use Bott-Samuelson varieties to analyze the K-homology of these Loop-Grassmannians as an algebra. And there's a very beautiful picture that I don't completely understand yet. But there's a lot of beautiful geometry in the theory of these Loop-Grassmannians. But let me just report on the example when G is SU2. And I'll have to tell you in private, those of you who are interested, how I made the calculations. So the first thing is that the K homology of, so that's an algebra over the representation ring of G. And it's the representation ring adjoined two variables, A and B, modulo the relation A squared modulo this crazy relation. Okay, where V is the defining representation. So V is the irreducible two-dimensional representation. the defining representation. So now I also have to tell you what the two maps to the representation ring are. So let's call this algebra A for now. And one map from A to the representation ring of G sends A and B to 0. And the other map I'm supposed to compute toward, that involves the twisting. So that'll involve our level K. And that map sends A to, A goes to rho K minus 1 squared, and B goes to rho K minus 1 rho K, where rho K is the irreducible representation of highest weight K. So I have what looks like a pretty, the funny thing is we already know the answer. We calculated it in the first 10 minutes of the talk. But now we have what looks like a pretty weird problem, that of computing these Tor groups over an algebra that's not a polynomial algebra. So to compute the Tor groups, you use a method, this was really... Why am I computing this in a hard way, even though I know already know the answer from an easy way? Because this method, I'm doing it for two reasons. One, I want to illustrate. One is I want to illustrate the method, and the method comes up in doing, you know, G2 or other groups up here. You wind up with computing Tor over an algebra that's not a polynomial algebra. So that's one thing. This ring A is not a polynomial algebra because of this relation. So I just want to tell you a technique, an old technique of Tate's for calculating this. But the other thing is, I just wanted to address this issue about the Verlinde ideal being generated by a regular sequence. Because you're going to see that this doesn't, that comes out of this calculation. I mean, it's just generated by one element, but it comes out in a tricky way, and it makes me, illustrate that. But maybe the thing I should just say is I wanted to illustrate Tate's method for calculating these Tor groups. Is that okay? All right, we can keep voting ask some of the students that have ever been in my classes. We vote a lot because so I need Tate's method. So this is I really recommend this paper. It's a beautiful old paper of Tate. So there's a method. Due to Tate for calculating these Tor groups. And it's in, and it appears in an old paper, a paper of Tate's in the Illinois Journal of Math, volume 1. they always get the best papers for volume 1. That's, and that I think 1957. Okay, so there's this very beautiful technique. So let's suppose, this will work for more complicated things, but suppose I want to compute, suppose I have some ring that looks like, I'll just do it for the ring of integers, even though here it's the representation ring of G. So suppose I have Z adjoin AB modulo F of AB. And I want to compute Tor over this algebra of Z with some module M. And let's just suppose for convenience that A and B go to 0 in Z, but they act by some other operators on M. Well, you might think just to try to use the Kazule complex. So you might, what do we need to do? We need to make a resolution of Z, a projective resolution. So we might try taking P, I'll call it P primed, to be A tensor an exterior algebra on alpha 1 and alpha 2, where the differential of alpha 1 is A and the differential of alpha 2 is B. But this complex is not a resolution of Z. And how does it go? what is, it's easy to work out what the complex is. So the complex, so let's write B for the polynomial algebra on A and B. Then we have B tensor this exterior algebra, mapping to B tensor the exterior algebra on alpha, and alpha 1 and alpha 2, by multiplication by F, and the co-kernel is A tensor this exterior algebra on alpha 1 and alpha 2. So I have a little short exact sequence because this is a integral domain and F is non-zero. So that gives me a long exact sequence of homology groups. And now these, this has homology only in dimension 0. This has homology only in dimension 0. That's the Kazuha complex. But this map is multiplication by 0. So by the long exact sequence, this implies that this complex here, which I called P tilde, has homology in dimension 0 and also in dimension 1. Now, it's important for us to get a handle on the one-dimensional generator. And so I'm supposed to pick, so that one-dimensional generator is a class that under the connecting homomorphism goes to the generator down here. And let me just do an example to show you how you work that out. Suppose f of ab was something like a squared minus ab. Then h1 would be generated by, you just have to, you break this up. There's, say, a alpha 1 plus a alpha 2. So see, this is a class that's a cycle because it hits the relation. I'm sorry, minus this. So let's just call that x. And you can see that that class, that hits f. So if I go through the definition of the connecting homomorphism, that's the element in H1 here. Or that's an element in H1 that comes around and hits the 1 in H0. All right, so in Tate's trick is that so Tate's resolution in this case is you take A, you tensor it with an exterior algebra on alpha 1 and alpha 2. I start like the Kazuha complex, but now I also have to get rid of this class X, and you put in what we call a divided polynomial algebra on beta. So gamma on beta is a divided polynomial algebra. So it has basis, things that we call beta n, which you think of as beta to the n over n factorial, and it has to satisfy the obvious multiplication relations these would have satisfy. So that's the binomial coefficient. All right, and then in this complex, D of alpha 1 is A, D of beta, alpha 2 is B. That's just like in the Kazuha resolution, and beta hits this mysterious class X. And then you use Leibniz's rule. So D of beta N is beta N minus 1 X. So this is Tate's trick. This is Tate's resolution, and it works really well when you have a polynomial algebra modulo a regular sequence. So I don't know. When I discovered this paper as a grad student, it just opened my eyes for. I hadn't realized that you could really compute TOR groups so effectively. But this really does lead to an effective resolution. Maybe I'll just say so this, the alphas are in degree one, and the beta is in homological degree two, because x was in degree one. So beta upper n is in homological degree n, and as soon as you get one of these betas, you have the potential of having infinitely many Tor groups. So, all right, now I think this may, now I may not have anybody interested in hearing. I was going to actually make the calculation in this case, but why don't I just give you the punchline? So Tate's resolution in this case, even though it doesn't look like it, it winds up showing that all the higher Tor groups are zero, and we wind up with Tor I in our case. So in Tate's resolution in this case shows that all the higher Tor I groups are zero, and that K G twisted of G zero is just it's just the representation ring of G modulo the ideal, and now it's modulo the ideal generated by A and B. That's our Tor zero. So it's modulo the ideal generated by rho K minus one squared and rho K times rho k minus 1. So that's a little funny. That's not quite what you'd expect. And we got this twisted K theory as the quotient of the representation ring by two elements. And these elements are not, these don't form a regular sequence. So the sort of, this question about whether the Verlinde algebra ideal is generated by a regular sequence isn't automatically answered by these techniques. There's kind of a cute fact about this. Let me just write down the Clebsch-Gordan equation. The Clebsch-Gordan tells me that rho k is equal to v times rho k minus 1 minus rho k minus 2, where v is rho 2, the two-dimensional representation. Now just think of this as the first step in Euclid's algorithm for working out the greatest common divisor of rho k and rho k minus 1. Right? I'm supposed to write this as a multiple of this plus a remainder, and then Euclid's algorithm tells me I'm supposed to write this as a multiple of this plus a remainder, and eventually I get down to rho 0, which is 1. And so the Clebsch-Gordan equation, you can just think of as Euclid's algorithm, and it tells you that rho k and rho k minus 1 are relatively prime, and therefore this is the same as the ideal generated by, this ideal is just the ideal generated by rho k minus 1. And so it is, in fact, a principal ideal, and we recover the answer. All right, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go so far over on such a hardcore computational talk, but I wanted to highlight these calculations that Chris and Volker Braun have done, giving the answer to the twisted K theory of simply connected Lie groups. And the other thing I wanted to kind of pass on to you was this great resolution of Tate's for making these other calculations. All right, thanks for listening.
There's another way of computing this D of GK from physics, right?
Yes.
In the center, the group, and the way it acts on the representation.
Right.
Does that give a, I never worked it out for other groups. I mean, does that?
I don't, so there's, Chris is, yeah, Chris is looking at those techniques for other groups. I don't have anything to report. He's also, so.
So there's a third method.
Yeah, and there's also another method. You can represent K homology classes by spin C cycles. And so you can also calculate this just geometrically by twisted spin C board using cycles. And Chris.
That would be nice because then we have a picture of deep brains on.
Yeah, so that Chris, you can do that really well for loops on SU2 and loops on SU3. And I think.
Those cases.
But I think the picture works pretty nice in general. Anyway, my hands are off it because Chris is doing it. But there's a pretty. Also that number D of GK comes out in a very beautiful way, but then you also get explicit cycles representing these exterior classes, which is nice, yeah. So those do have geometric. We should talk about it let's talk about that later, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anything more questions? Anything anyone wants to vote on?
Let's thank Mike again for a great lecture.